only how a vehicle might travel through space at the great distances with a limited fuel on board, but also would begin to explain the basic physics behind all of these objects that have been seen. The main purpose, however, is to introduce to the world some solutions to the Earth, very earthly problems of how we're going to live on this planet. And I think this tracks back to one of the practical aspects of what the Disclosure Project has been doing, and that is, it isn't just a matter of having had a sighting of a UFO that's been tracked on radar or this or that, as compelling as that evidence is. It's the fact that there are a range of devices that have been developed both by humans and apparently been studied by humans that originated from an extraterrestrial origin that demonstrate a physics that is way beyond the burning of a fuel in an internal combustion chamber. In other words, the people that we have now within our team can document that technologies both of human invention and of extraterrestrial origin have been known, studied, and actively and deliberately suppressed from public release since at least the 1950s that could have replaced all of the energy systems on the Earth today. And this becomes quite relevant when one considers that aside from the question whether the environment is being harmed by fossil fuels, and I think there's very little doubt that it is, and it's common sense to anyone who looks at the air over any major metropolitan city, but I think that the bigger question is, since we cannot continue to have billions of people using a fuel source that is this damaging to the environment and to human health, and because there's really not enough of this noxious stuff called oil to go around for 6 billion people, never mind in the future when we may have 10 or 15 billion people on the planet, that we have to begin to release technologies that would be powerful enough and practical enough to replace fossil fuels. And also, I might add, the nuclear power industry, which is creates its own toxic waste that lasts for 25,000 years or so. And I think that the fact that these technologies have existed since, I would say, at least the 1920s by human invention, the sort of Tesla constellation of breakthroughs that have been heard about and talked about, but our team has done research where we have found both inventions and inventors that have had these kinds of systems since at least the 1920s that are not anti-gravity, but that are electric generating systems that access the so-called quantum vacuum space energy that is around an object and which allows for an enormous amount of power to come out of it. So what, you know, sort of the spin-off operation from the Disclosure Project is Space Energy Access Systems, or SEAS, which is in the process of investigating and testing a number of these systems from non-governmental, non-covert sources, in other words, just civilian scientists who have broken into the same area of physics that apparently Tesla and T. Henry Moray and Floyd Sweet and some of these other inventors had over the years. Because in terms of announcing something to the public, one of the things that became very clear from the Disclosure Project work is that many people are saying, well, you know, we can see that there's something out there and that these UFOs are real, but can anything be demonstrated as to their modus operandi, their physics? And in fact, I had a couple members of the Congress ask me to do exactly that, which led to, in the fall and late summer and fall of 2001, the formation of SEAS, because it became quite clear that the next level of disclosure, I mean, even though there are millions and millions and millions of people who've heard now this testimony from these people, and the majority of the population believe that the UFOs exist and the government's keeping them secret. I mean, that's a pretty solid statistic from any professionally done survey ever done. The question is, what can we do practically to bring out chances that would do tremendous good for the world? I think that's really the focus of what we're doing right now, and I think that's a very big job. You're going from government documents and testimony to the actual physical devices, which are the raison d'etre for the secrecy. I mean, the secrecy around this entire subject hasn't been enforced because people have seen a UFO. It's been suppressed. The whole subject has been suppressed because the energy systems behind these UFOs, which have been studied and understood since the 40s and 50s, would replace all the oil and gas and coal and the public and stepping on the kind of toes that are maintaining the current geopolitical and economic order in the world, you begin to understand why this whole subject has been kept secret. And I think that we're going to try, to the best of our ability in the coming months, to secure and independently test and reproduce one of these energy devices. Now, we have actually seen in the last few months a couple of these systems work. We're trying to get the inventors to cooperate with this scientific vetting process, and that's been the most difficult thing to do. Most of these scientists who have been, I think, burned in the past by others or have reasons to be afraid are very much unwilling to have their system brought forward and go through the normal due diligence and testing process that any new technology requires. But, of course, unless you do that, it can't be accepted by the scientific community, and it can't be accepted by the media, and it won't be accepted by the public. So it begins to be a catch-22. And what we're trying to do now is to find rational scientists who have these sort of systems, who understand the strategy of leveraging it into a world of acceptance and then of mass production so that people begin to get away from the use of fossil fuels. But the biggest problem is actually not technical. The problem is mostly psychological, and that is on the part of many of these people who understand the physics of this. They're afraid. Some of them have been traumatized in the past, and so we have a very big task in trying to get people to cooperate with what would be considered a normal process of scientific verification and reproducibility. Now, if we can achieve that, and we hope we can in the next few months, so we have some very, very, very promising technologies that we're in the process of pursuing and investigating right now, then that will be, to answer that question, it will be the big news conference, because we feel that we need to ratchet this up from testimony and government documents to an actual physical device operating in front of the public, which has been vetted and certified by independent scientists with enormous credibility. Now, we have access to these sorts of scientists who are open-minded and are willing to do the testing. The question is there anyone out there with a machine that works and that is in the kilowatt or greater output range that is over unity, in other words, is putting out more energy than you have to supply to it from the power grid because it is successfully trapping the energy in the quantum vacuum space around it. If there is such a device out there in the possession of a scientist who understands the importance of the scientific method and of the independent verification and of the proper disclosure to the masses of this technology, then we'll be able to do this very quickly. But I think that the rate-limiting thing here really is the psychology of the scientific inventor community who are, I think, with good reason, afraid, and who need to be educated about the process of what we're doing and the kind of network that CSE has. I mean, within our advisory group for CSE, we have access to every living U.S. president, past and current. We have access to virtually every head of state in the world. We have retired diplomats from numerous countries ready to open doors throughout the world for us. We have a team of people ready to put enormous capital behind such a system. But the problem is getting the scientists to understand that there is a disciplined strategy that has to happen, and that these things just don't emerge out of someone's basement or garage onto the shelves of stores and into people's homes operating their homes without a very sophisticated, multi-track strategy that involves a political consideration, the environmental movement, the mass culture, PR, communications, national security, military issues, international relations, and large international economic issues. And these have all got to be coordinated, which is what the CSE team is capable of doing. And I think if you want, a lot of people wonder why, if indeed there have been these sort of devices that have come and gone over the last 75 years or more, why aren't they in our homes and why aren't they running our cars? Well, it's a very good question, and the answer to it is because the technology is only about less than 10% of the problem. All the money on Earth is maybe less than another 10%. At least 80 to 90% of this problem is leadership, courage, and the willingness to get a lot of people to work together to make a change like this, because you're going up against these enormous cartels and economic interests that have a metered economy where everyone's paying by the pump, by the gallon, or by the kilowatt hour to the public utility, or by the ton for coal. So if you are talking about bringing out an energy system that extracts energy from the space around it, you have just eliminated that supply line of energy eventually from the world economy. So it is an enormously complex issue, and one that we don't take in a frivolous way. We understand that there are very solid arguments for keeping these things secret, quite frankly, that existed many years ago. Most of them, however, were self-serving, and I think at this point they're completely self-serving. There can be no justification for the continued impoverishment and, quite frankly, economic enslavement of most of the world's population trapped in a state of enormous poverty, which cannot be cured through pumping more gas out of the oil out of the ground. And there can be no excuse for further decimating the world's environment that we have to leave to our children's children's children. So at this point, there can be no moral argument for secrecy around this, and we find that there are growing numbers of people inside and outside of government who support that position, but that support, it really has to crystallize around a legitimate, vetted, triple-tested, independently reproduced system. And this is something which the new energy field has so far not done, and that's what CSE is offering to do if we can identify the proper system and a scientist who understands the necessity of a very sophisticated and world-embracing strategy like this. And I think without that strategy, it won't work. And that's why, in the past, we have not seen these things come out. The very powerful interests, economic and corporate interests, have routinely bought up the rights to these sort of inventions and suppressed them. This we can prove. We can also prove that many of these things have been suppressed through the abuse of the national security laws in various countries, not just America, but in other places. And then there are other rogue elements that have done things such as sabotaging laboratories, trumping up charges against people and getting them in prison, murdering people and things of this sort. So there's a whole range of rogue activities that have been employed to keep these, frankly, earth-saving and life-saving technologies away from the public. And it's only going to change if you put together a powerful enough coalition of people who are not going to stay silent anymore and are going to do the correct things to prove the system, but also do the courageous thing and resist the temptation to be either bought off or to be threatened. Now, the reason Disclosure Project and CSE are well-suited to do this is that we've already done it with a very difficult and controversial area where people have been threatened and where people have been murdered, and that's the UFO and ET area. And we know that having survived that ordeal, quite frankly, personally, that there's a good chance, by no means a certainty, but a good chance that we can make a solid run at these energy issues and bring these technologies to the public. Now, I estimate that several billion dollars in capitalization will be required to do that, but I'm also convinced that there are people within our team that can capitalize and do that around the proper technology and the proper strategy. So right now, we've got an entire system set up in search of a legitimate technology. Now, when I say legitimate, I mean one that's practical. We have seen some systems that put out over unity milliwatts of power, or put out a few hundred watts of power, but when they attempt to put it under a load running something in the real world, it won't work, or it collapses the field around it, or it gets out of resonance and the system is no longer functioning. So we have to find one that is robust enough to prove this to the world, and we have now seen a couple of these systems, and we're in the process of investigating them. And if it works out that the scientists and the people who have the knowledge of how these things work will join with us in this strategy, the next big thing and the next big news conference will be an over-unity device, not necessarily an anti-gravity one, but an over-unity electromagnetic generation system functioning on a stage with the imprimatur of a number of prestigious scientists and institutions being presented to the public, the fact that the thing works and that it is, in fact, putting out many times more energy than man-made energy has to go into it, because it's able to access this this, as it's been called, the plenum of the vacuum, this tremendous amount of energy that's in the quantum vacuum state around us here in space, wherever we're around an object here on planet Earth. Some have estimated that there's enough energy in every cubic centimeter of that space to run the Earth for a day. I don't know if that's a true statistic or not, but I know that it's an enormous amount of power. And so tapping into that and being able to convert it into practical power to run a home or a village or what have you is the task of CSEES, and I think it is going to be the next big disclosure. We're hopeful for that. Now, our team can do that probably before then. I think that if some of these technologies are, if the scientists who have these technologies cooperate properly, we could have this disclosed to the world well before then. In fact, I dare say it could happen this fall, this summer or fall. However, we've suffered already a 2 or 3 month delay in the acquisition of one technology because the inventor, who had already signed an agreement with us to bring this out, did not disclose other, shall we say, uncooperative business interests that he was entangled with. And so those have now intervened to stop the whole process. And this is the kind of chicanery and nonsense that unfortunately has happened for many, many years, where these poor inventors get eventually hooked up to, I don't know how to say it, unfortunate interests. I don't mean conspiracy-wise or any secret interests, but just people who are able to make a lot of trouble. And so we've now suffered almost a two-month, well, I think this week it'll be a two-month delay in being able to bring this one particular system that looked very promising, that we had initially done our own internal testing on site, into the whole development, reproducibility, and independent university laboratory testing process. And that whole endeavor, which was ready to go, has been held up for 2 months. And what that means is that we've lost 2 months of the world's environment, lost 2 months of the world's poverty being eliminated and all these problems being solved because of some rather banal and unfortunate machinations from people who have stopped that process. So that's the kind of thing we're dealing with, which of course can be very frustrating, as you can imagine. And so when we look at a timeline of when this can come out, in fact, had that system not, had the inventor fulfilled his obligations to us that he had in his written agreement, I would dare say that right now we would already have reproduced the system and had it at multiple university laboratories being confirmed and proven, and it's very likely that this summer it could have been disclosed to the world. So that's how quickly we're capable of moving. The question isn't us. The question is whether or not those people who know how to build these things are able to cooperate professionally and adhere to the agreements they make and to the commitments they make, and quite frankly, understand and comprehend the importance of a coordinated strategy that brings to bear the support of millions of people in the public for our protection, the protection that we have within the current political and national security military structure, since the majority of people in the military and in the political world want these systems out. Believe it or not, there are very few who don't, and unfortunately those are the ones who have a lot of covert illegal power and ruthless power, but the majority of people, if you go to the Pentagon, would say they would welcome such a breakthrough. I think the other thing people have to understand is that these inventors have to comprehend the nature of a strategy that involves not just finance. I mean, most people think that, oh, well, if I had the X numbers of dollars, this could get done. The money really isn't that important. It's the clout. It's the leverage. It's the support from people in a number of well-connected places around the world. And these people are on the CSEES team, and they're in the Disclosure Project team. But the scientists have to understand that the strategy has to involve pulling all those elements together and doing the proper due diligence. You know, when you make an acclaim, one thing that Carl Sagan said that I agreed with, and it's one of the few things he said I agreed with about this kind of thing, is that he said extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. You simply cannot walk out onto a stage and plop an over-unity device out on the stage in a black box and say, well, it has, you know, whatever, 2 watts of power starting it up, and there's 30 kilowatts coming out, enough to run 10 homes. Even though I know that that's possible, and in fact I've seen a device that I think can do that, you cannot, no one on planet Earth will take your word for it, my word for it, or certainly not the inventor's word for it. It's going to have to go through reproducibility studies. It's under proper non-disclosure agreements, to protect the property of the inventor. You have to get the scientific community and the university community and the laboratory community to actually be able to see it and test it. Now, most people would say, oh, well, aren't all those interests corrupt? And I'd say, yes, there are some corrupt interests, but not most. The vast majority of them would love to see such a thing and would do an honest analysis of it. Now, what we've done at SEAS and at the Disclosure Project is to identify the what I call straight shooters who are in scientific positions of credibility, mainstream scientific community, who will do this testing and will do an honest report of its efficacy, so that if in fact it is 1,000 times over Unity, meaning it puts out 1,000 times more power than you put into it, that's what they'll report. They may not explain where it comes from, because I don't know that anyone can adequately explain that. It's a very deep question. But I think that they will report, and I'm confident they will report an honest finding out to the public. Well, that's quite frankly what's required, because, you know, there have been too many of these things over the years where people trot out a dog and pony show, and they have some black box sitting somewhere on a racetrack or on a table or where have you, and the media, the scientific community, and the public just yawn with great skepticism, as well they should. Because why would anyone believe such a thing? Because we know of a case. In fact, I was personally asked to evaluate one of these devices, which was a $5 million takedown scheme that this particular inventor and business guy had fleeced $5 million out of people for something that was a 30% efficiency engine. In other words, you could buy something at True Value Hardware or Ace Hardware or Sears or Walmart that would be more efficient than this motor was, but it was a bunch of smoke and mirrors and black boxes and this and that, and $5 million were fleeced out of the unsuspecting public. So there's a long track record of fraud associated with this area, just like there's a long track record of fraud associated with the UFO area. So you have to be very aware of this, and unfortunately, many scientists who have the real thing go, well, this is so obvious. Can't anyone just see it? And I go, no. You've got to get the scientific institutions and people who are straight shooters and who are honest that we have identified to do the testing and put their imprimatur on it, put their signature to it, say, yes, this is for real. And if you do that, then you pull the thing open on a stage at the National Press Club or at the National Science Foundation or in the Congress or what have you. In fact, there are some congressmen we're working with now that I think would sponsor such an event on the lawn of the Capitol. But the question is, where is the beef? And this is really the question. And you have gotten, and since the scientists and the inventor community really have to understand that perception is everything. One's personal knowledge that such a thing is true is not at all convincing to the masses. The masses are going to be convinced when there are, I hate to use the word, scientific authorities who say, we've tested it and it is for real. Now, if you did that sort of blind alley, you'd get ambushed, because it's like the cold fusion test at MIT that Dr. Eugene Maloff said was defrauded, and they lied before Congress and everything else. You can't just walk in naively. You've got to have connections in the scientific institutions where you ferret out who the honest people are. But that's what we've been doing for 12 years, and that's who we've identified. So I'm very confident. In fact, there's even a Nobel Prize-winning scientist who's ready to test and be involved with this, if it's the real McCoy that is within our network. So the question becomes, are the scientists who understand these physics and the technology willing to submit to a rational, disciplined vetting and verification program, without which, number one, the public won't believe it. Number two, the scientific community certainly won't believe it. Number three, the political establishment won't move behind it. Number four, the financial community won't get behind it, because you're not going to take on a $5 trillion part of the world economy with a few million dollars. You're going to need at least several billion, if not several tens of billions of dollars. So all of those elements can't line up behind something in a black box where someone says, hey, wink, wink, take my word for it, because any sophisticated person knows, as I do, that there have been countless fraudulent schemes that have fleeced millions of dollars out of people with these kinds, this kind of chicanery, like the one I had described a moment ago. So I think that that's why what we're doing is a very rigorous and specific process, and I think perhaps for some people, they find that to be uncomfortable because it requires a certain amount of, I hate to use the word normalcy, but in the sense of normal due diligence and normal scientific reproducibility and whatnot, which unfortunately neither the UFO field nor the new energy field has ever submitted itself to. And for that reason, it has a little credibility. Now, this is one of the reasons why the Disclosure Project had an enormous amount of credibility in circles that are normally very skeptical, is because we didn't have one or two people in a civilian world come forward with information. We had dozens and dozens of military people with their credentials, and if people need to see them, with their DD-214 discharge forms, who were in positions of sensitive access, who had all this information. I think that's one of the really key things. Well, I mean, the question about who are the folks who are in this clandestine group, it's a very complex entity that transcends any national boundaries and which has its key power not inside any government, including the U.S., but in various institutions, corporations, and financial areas, and certain religious areas. I can tell you that the group that keeps this sort of thing secret has more power than the U.S. President and the Congress put together, certainly has more power than any other national government in the world, and which pretty much does it as damn well pleases. I can say this with some authority, since I'm the only living person to tell the tale and survive it, having worked at the level where I've had meetings with people inside this clandestine group, to find out exactly how it's structured and who's involved and why they're doing what they're doing. And also met with people such as the President Clinton CIA director and senior generals and admirals at the Joint Chiefs of Staff level and the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, where these people who were not given access to this group or to the knowledge this group has were flat out denied access, even though constitutionally and by the rule of law they most certainly should have known. And, of course, I've told this story before, how I was meeting with the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff a few years ago, and he had been given by me a number of code names and code numbers of projects related to this area and had made the appropriate inquiries and, in fact, had found the entity, the so-called Majestic entity in the MJ-12 or Magi Control or Royal Ops, Cosmic Ops, all these little cells that deal with this stuff within the military and intelligence world, which is, by the way, not as key an area as the corporate world, but that's another long discussion. But at any rate, he was flat out told, even though he was an admiral and was head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that he did not have a need to know. And, of course, he went ballistic. He said to me, with an Apollo astronaut in the room and a couple of other of our witnesses, if he didn't have a need to know, who the hell did? And I said, well, with all due respect, you know, the head of the Ministry of Defense with whom I've met, Lord Hill Norton, had the same thing happen to him years ago. And I can tell you that the president, CIA director of Woolsey, Jim Woolsey, who was Clinton's first CIA director, had the same thing happen to him. And there are members of the Senate Intelligence Committee with whom I have personally met who have had the same thing happen to them. So you're in good company. And he kind of laughed. But the truth is that, you know, there's this enormous naivete within the UFO and new energy and conspiracy community that if you're in X position, you're in the know. This isn't true at all. There are some CIA directors who've known and some that haven't. There have been some members of the Senate Intelligence Committee who have known or who are currently involved and others who aren't. There are some people who have been on Senate Armed Services Committee who are up to their eyebrows in this stuff and others who will never be told anything. Your position and your rank has nothing to do with it. What it has to do with is whether or not you're willing to go along with, quite frankly, an agenda of illegal transnational secrecy and power, which goes beyond the reach of the normal checks and balances provided for in any civilized country's constitution. And that's what this group is doing, and this is how it's behaved for years, since at least the 40s and 50s, if not before. So I think that there's a certain amount of naivete out there about this group and what its objectives are. First of all, it's not an objective. It's a fractured group at this point. There are various factions issues. Some may be dealing with intelligence. Some deal directly with the extraterrestrial contact issue. Others deal purely with the economic and energy issues to maintain that under track. And there's some two or three hundred people involved in this sort of thing. And at the very top of it is about two dozen individuals and families that really kind of call the shots when push comes to shove. But that's all a dynamic process that's in flux, to be honest with you. I mean, I know that I've had people from within these programs come to me and say, man, the stuff you guys have been doing have really stepped on some toes and shaken things up, and a lot of the shakeup has been a good thing. And that this is a dynamic process that's changing, and I always say to people that 80% of what we're doing is an inside game dealing with this issue, and has nothing that the public never sees. You know, because it's all stuff going on with, like, the cigarette man and the X-Files, these kind of characters. And believe me, those characters are for real. That's not conspiracy theory. And I've met with them. And what you find, ultimately, is that you've got an enormous number of people within that group who want to see this stuff out. I would say at this point it's got to be close to 50% of this so-called Majestic 12 group, which is now has various compartments and names within it, but which has an international representation. I would say upwards of 50%, maybe more, want these things brought out sooner rather than later. The problem is it takes a very small percentage of rogue and very violent people to control a very small number of them. Okay? I mean, the majority of them. So a small number can control a larger number if they're ruthless and if they're violent and if they use Terminate with Extreme Prejudice protocols, the TWEEP, T-W-E-P protocols, which involve killing people, quite frankly. So I think that, you know, you're dealing with a group that I think is dynamically changing, rather dysfunctional, where there's a lot of dissent and controversy about what direction to take and how far to take it. Now, there's a hard core of it, which very much knows what it wants to do and is a rather violent and tragic, I think, entity. And its funding comes from a number of sources, not just the covert black budget of the United States and other countries, but also a number of other activities, which I have reliably had represented to me involves clandestine and illegal activities of a number of in a number of areas that you can well imagine. I won't go further into that, but the so-called illegal drug trade and arms trade and financial international financial community and things of this sort. Money isn't the problem for this group. I mean, it's the hundreds of billions, trillions, whatever. I mean, you've got a $30 trillion global economy, and you can suck enough money out of it to do what you want to do. What it's really about is power. What it's really about is maintaining the status quo of the current geopolitical power structure, which would be changed very quickly if this thing was released. I mean, imagine if the billion people in India and the billion people in sub-Saharan Africa and South America, who are now living in the most abject poverty, and in fact even middle-class countries like Argentina now have a 58% poverty rate or something like that. I mean, it's appalling. That if these technologies were to come out and you had an ability to have every village have its own electrification and electricity and light manufacturing and irrigation and clean water and advancement without pollution associated with it, you would see a $30 trillion world economy become a multi-hundred trillion dollar world economy, which everyone would say would be a great thing, except it would be a decentralized world economy. You would not have an enormous amount of the levers in the hands of a few people who can control the price of oil or the price of a commodity and have it metered and have that control the destiny of millions and billions of people, which is the current situation. So power would slip out of the reins of power would slip out of this group's hand because these technologies are literally and figuratively decentralized in their power nature, decentralized in political power, because the actual power itself, the energy that it's drawing on, is coming from the space around the object. It doesn't require a line of supertankers coming out of the Middle East with commodity prices controlling the price of this black stuff that we use to run our electricity and our cars and our homes and our heating and what have you. So it would totally revolutionize the world. And as the Bible said, even the deserts will bloom because you'd be able to pull in water from the seas and return areas that used to be forested that have become deserts back to forest, because you could provide all the irrigation you needed, because the cost of desalinization and transporting water is all energy related. You know, so if the energy cost is zero, because it's free energy, the equation for every part of the world economy changes, whether it's agricultural, whether it's public health, whether it's water availability, irrigation, manufacturing can be scrubbed to zero pollution, and therefore you can manufacture, it can be highly automated. I mean, it's just an enormous change. You cannot imagine a bigger change than having this information come out, which is exactly why it's secret. These people don't want that kind of change. They want things to maintain a homeostasis and a certain amount of status quo. And, you know, looking short term, that makes sense. I mean, why rock the boat? I've had people say to me, I've had people come to me from corporations and covert places, say, why rock the boat on this? Let a sleeping dog lie. Well, short term, they're right. To be honest with you, they're absolutely right. Short term, you know, they're right. If you're looking at it from the point of view of a white, northern hemispheric person who's doing well, there are only 600 million people live in America and Europe, and there are 6 billion people in the world. So if you look at it globally, it's a catastrophe already, and it's getting worse every year. Not to mention the death of the environment and the death of the continental shelf in the oceans and the depletion of the ozone and the global warming issue and the nasty air pollution in our cities and the toxic spills of oil into the oceans and on land that kill marine life and plant life and what have you. I mean, all of those things are one area, but the basic way the world is living is that it's enormously unemployed, it's enormously impoverished, and it's enormously getting worse like that every year, all artificially. It's something that we can fix, and we should have fixed before I was born. I was born in 1955. I'm 47. And I'll tell you, all of these technologies could have been brought out before I was even a twinkle in my father's eye. And that's a sad statement, because we're living in a time where the excesses of Mideast wars, the need for maintaining oil supplies, the pollution, the poverty of the world's population, which radicalizes people, because the more they're poor, the more they feel the world is unjust, the more they hate the West, the more they want to give in to extreme measures. All of that is of our own making. And look, it's going to get worse unless we change it. You know, there's this wonderful expression that I like from the Chinese tradition where it says, unless we change direction, we're likely to end up where we're going. Well, look at where we're going. So, I mean, this is the fundamental wisdom that's lacking in this whole secrecy game. Short term, yes, there are economic and geopolitical and social issues that are better served by letting things stay like they are. But if you look at the big picture, and you're looking at the whole of humanity, and you're looking at the whole of the human race and the earth and our future, it is so unwise, it is so self-defeating, and it is so foolish. And I think that the thing that's good about that is that we've been articulating that argument publicly at the levels of the CIA director and the president since 1993. And it's beginning to seep in more and more and more and more. And there are larger and larger numbers of people in places that people would be shocked to hear. Oil-producing countries, oil companies that are reaching out to us saying, you're right, it's time to make this change. Now, how are we going to do it? We've got to first have a machine that works. And I don't anticipate a secret government group handing over a machine. Not yet, maybe someday. But in the meanwhile, it means that humans out here in the civilian world need to work together to make that happen. And that's really what we are single-mindedly focused on right now. Well, the question about whether we've been using military weapons, Star Wars-type weapons, against extraterrestrial vehicles is a very important one. It is my assessment that, in fact, we have been. I've interviewed a number of people who have actually worked on this project or actually been present when we have targeted an extraterrestrial vehicle, either within the atmosphere or in near-Earth orbit in space, and where we have successfully, unfortunately, successfully hit the object and caused it to decompensate and crash or be destroyed. I think that is a serious issue, and I think that if you look at what Wernher von Braun said to his assistant, Kirill Rosin, I think that, you know, the biggest danger, one of the biggest dangers facing humanity, is this concept that whatever we don't control and understand is an enemy that we must kill. and this has been the root of racism and tribalism and ethnic cleansing and religious bigotry and sexism and homophobia and whatever you want to call it. It, you know, has been the bane of humanity for thousands of years. Unfortunately, that sort of atavistic and self-destructive paranoia and tribalism is being now championed by folks who have very powerful weapon systems and who have trained them on these obviously peaceful extraterrestrial visitors. So I think that it's a very worrisome development. It's something that we continue to monitor. Ultimately, it cannot be corrected until the group that is doing this is reined in. It can't be reined in until there's a general disclosure on the subject where the officials in Washington and the officials in other countries and at the United Nations look this issue in the face and begin to do something about it. Right now, everyone is ostriches with their heads in the sand. I have to say that this is one of the real problems, is that even people who have powerful positions with whom we've met who understand what's going on and what the stakes are, ultimately, they don't want to do anything about it because they view it as too dangerous or too risky to their own either personal ambitions in their career or for their own personal safety, because they see it as a lose-lose situation for them personally, selfishly, I'm talking. It may be the best thing in the world for the world, but for the individuals who take this on, it's a catastrophe. If you want to know the truth, I'm the best example of it. It's catastrophic. I mean, you know, there's no good thing that comes to an individual who wants to do this. You have to be willing to do it for a purely altruistic, and I hate to use the word like a bodhisattva almost. You have to be willing to do it in a very self-abnegating and self-sacrificing way, because you're going to get nothing but grief. You're going to, there's no compensation in this. I mean, I tell people, hilarious, you know, my daughter who just got into Duke University and another one that just got into Stanford, I can't send them to these schools because they can't get any financial aid because of who they are. And I can't afford to spend $30,000 to $40,000 a year. So they have to go to state schools. And people say, oh, well, big deal, they're going to state. I say, yes, but for a doctor, that's a big sacrifice to turn to your children and say you can't send them to the college of their choice. And they're straight-A students with the 1,500 scores or better on their SATs who can't go to the best school they're getting into. Well, this is just one little drama going on this week in my house. And you can imagine, I mean, who wants to step into an area where you're going to have to make these kind of sacrifices? Well, there's a few of us who believe enough in this to do it, but very few people. And when you start talking to the apparatchiks and the functionaries and the bureaucrats and the politicians, and they're all lawyers, by the way, and the career scientists who are no better at the National Science Foundation or the National Academy of Sciences, they'll say, yes, this is all true, but go talk to someone else because I want to get promoted next year to the next little rung on the ladder. Or the politician will say, I want to be able to get reelected next year and I can't get associated with something that's controversial, blah, blah, blah. So what you find is that you have to manifest the courage, that what the world needs is leadership and courage, and it isn't getting it. It certainly isn't getting it from the U.S., and it isn't getting it from any other country, Canada or any other place. So the paucity of courageous leadership where people are willing to do the right thing, even if it's dangerous and even if it doesn't get them a promotion or get them a pay raise, that's why the world is the way it is. You look around in the world and you see the world, from my perspective, having done this for 12 years and been at the top of all these meetings, the reason the world is the way it is that it root a spiritual crisis. People are not willing to be unselfish. And to be unselfish, you have to be spiritual. And you cannot be unselfish and turn your back on this. I mean, if you understand how important this is, you know, if you're an unselfish person, you go, what? This is the most important thing there is to do. But there are a lot of people out there who are interested in these things, but when it really comes to walking the talk and actually doing it and walking the walk, they're not willing to do that. And I think that's why in the corridors of power and in corporations and in international institutions and what have you, people don't push on these issues because it rocks the boat so hard. And it's like this book called Into the Buzzsaw that Gore Vidal did the foreword to, where all these journalists talked about taking on different controversial subjects like TWA-800 and other things, and that it ruined their careers because if they were to push in an area where the powers that be wanted them not to look, they would end up having their journalistic careers or their scientific careers ended. So that buzzsaw is real, and so you've got to be willing to go the distance. Now, when you look at this issue about the weapons in space, you go, wow, this has got to be stopped. And when I took this to the Boutros Ghali family, who were head of the United Nations back in the 90s, they were appalled. And Mrs. Boutros Ghali looked at me and she said, oh my God, is that happening? I said, yes, it really is happening. I've interviewed several independent cooperating people who have been part of operations where we have targeted and destroyed and shot down or harmed extraterrestrial vehicles, including ones that are, some of these weapon systems use very Star Wars type things like pulsed electromagnetic weapons, electromagnetic pulse directional weapons and things of this sort, scalar weapon systems that Tom Bearden talks about. And unfortunately, these people look at you and they're horrified and they go, oh, and then they look at me and they say, well, gee, try to get that fixed as soon as you can. I'm going, what am I? I'm a doctor here in Virginia, you know. So it's very, very interesting to see, you know, I can tell you probably from now until tomorrow this time, I could tell you story after story after story of enormously powerful people who've looked into this and have walked away because it wouldn't personally be self-aggrandizing. It wouldn't get them a job promotion. It wouldn't get them money. And I know that this sounds terribly cynical, but I'm just telling you the truth. The truth is that we people out here who are not the big shots, and you know, we're just ordinary people here. I'm an emergency doctor doing this. We're going to have to step into the leadership role on these issues because it's not going to come first from these corridors of power. It's going to come from us. And then they're going to fall in line. It's the old adage, when the people lead, the leaders will follow. And so that's what we're going to do, and that's what we've been doing for a number of years. Because you find that until this area becomes a comfortable area for people to operate in, there's very few people like Dr. Loader, our science advisor, who's taken an unpaid leave from his a very well-paid professorship at the University of New Hampshire to help us, and myself, who's giving up $250,000 a year U.S. as a medical doctor to be doing this stuff. I mean, there just aren't that many people. And if you look at people who are these ambitious, ladder-climbing bureaucrats and politicians and lawyers, I mean, how many of them are going to do such a thing? Well, it just doesn't happen. So what I say to the public, what I'm saying to everyone listening to this interview, is that everyone has to step up here and play their role, and they can't be codependently looking to Big Brother in Washington or Big Brother in Canada or in Great Britain or wherever to fix this problem. It's going to be fixed by the people out here in the masses, in the public. And I think it's going to, that's the main thing that we have to do, is we have to provide leadership around which then all these changes can happen, and then you'll find the bureaucrats falling into line and the politicians stepping up. Until then, all they're going to do is behind the scenes. They're going to do stuff behind the scenes. They're not going to step out in front of this thing because they see this thing as a freight train coming down the track that they don't want to be in front of. And I think, quite frankly, this is one of the real problems. It's a spiritual crisis where there isn't adequate selflessness, there isn't adequate concern for the fellow human being and the earth and the future of our earth. There's not adequate willingness to personally sacrifice to get something difficult achieved. And so the more our society has become fat and happy, self-satisfied, the more we have circled the drain on these issues because the leadership isn't there. Leadership requires courage, and courageous leadership is not very much in vogue right now. Everyone wants to play it safe, and of course the password even at the Pentagon is CYA, cover your ass. Everyone wants to play it safe, get their promotion, get another star, retire, get their nice retirement check, sit on the golf course and putt around with Tiger Woods somewhere, you know? I mean, that's the kind of mentality, and I know it's a very sort of banal sort of view of things, but when push comes to shove, that's really, everyone puts their pants on one leg at a time. And what you got to do is realize that people are not going to, for the most part, do the right thing if it's difficult. They're going to do the right thing when it's easy. And the test of nobility, in my mind, and the test of real courage, is to do the right thing even when it's very difficult and it's very dangerous. That's what courage is. So the lack of spiritual courage and the lack of a sense of selflessness is why we have allowed this group to get so powerful. You know, look, it takes two to tango. I don't blame the people in this secret group as much as I blame those of us who know what the score is and have done nothing about it. And there are a lot of those people. So, again, nothing happens in a vacuum. You can't have the power they have unless someone has given it up to them. Yes, they've taken it patiently and at times violently, but they've been allowed to get away with it for decades. Now, who who's going to change that? That's the that's really the question. Well, it's going to have to be a lot of people. It's going to have to be a lot of people coalescing around a certain amount of knowledge, and that's why I'm convinced that if we can identify technology that has practical value to the common person, they can see that the average homeowner can see, hey, I can put this in my house. I'm not going to have a $400, $500, or $600 electric bill to the California utilities. I'm going to be able to have free energy and sell energy back to the grid and make $400 or $500 a month. And it's going to be zero pollution, and it's going to be basically a free source of energy for me and my family. That amount of enlightened self-interest will carry us a long way, and with it will be a certain amount of support that will come. And that's why I'm convinced that these energy devices coming out to the public is the single greatest force for changing the status quo of the way the world is operating today. And that's why we're focusing on it so much. And with that change, then perhaps there will be enough people and a new leadership that will be able to rein in some of these more egregious abuses of these covert weapons programs that you ask about that are targeting these extraterrestrial vehicles. I mean, that's a program that's just completely out of control, but the people who should be controlling it don't have access to even knowledge that it's happening. You know, this is one of the things the CIA director said to me when at the end of our meeting. And I said, you know, we really, this is, in the, of course, in 1993. This is almost 10 years ago. It's nine and a half years ago. And I turned to the CIA director and I said, look, we really need for you and the president to take the bull by the horns here and get this information out and get these programs under control. And he looked at me with this look and he said, well, Dr. Greer, how do we disclose what we don't have access to or know about? And how do we control something that we don't even know how to get our hands around it? I mean, you know, and it's a very, very good question. And I just turned to him and I said, you've got to work to find out about it and get control of it. I mean, you know, you are the president of the United States, I mean, in the case of Clinton and the case of George Bush today. So I think that the only question is, are people willing to take on this group, which has shown itself to be at times violent and very powerful? I know that one of my military deep throat insiders said that this particular, the group dealing with this issue, has more power than all the governments of the world combined, including that of the U.S., the U.S. presidency, and the U.S. Congress. And I looked at them, I said, yes, I know. But that's why everyone else has been not willing to do it. But I don't think that's the reason. That's an excuse. See, cowardice is always an excuse. It's never a reason. And so there's a big difference in my mind between a valid reason and an excuse. The secrecy is something that won't change until enough people get behind changing it. And it is a spiritual quest as much as it is a material quest, and or more so. Because at its root is this big question of when you wake up in the morning and you know the truth about this, the question becomes, what are you going to do about it? And there are enough people, that is the good news, is there are enough people awakening to that question and awakening to the answer that, hey, we've got to do something about it. Now, will it be too late, too little? Who knows? All you can do is the best you can do. And the key thing now is for people out there to help us find a sane and rational inventor. I say that because so many of them are not very rational. But a sane and rational inventor who has a device that fulfills the criteria that we have on the SEAS website, SEASPower.com, that is willing to cooperate with this strategy. And we're not asking those inventors to get in the way of this thing. I'm willing to be the lightning rod and take all the hard hits. In fact, the way we prefer to do it is through a licensing agreement where those people don't even have to be identified. They can hide out in their place in Costa Rica if they want to. And we can do all this heavy lifting because that's what this is what the SEAS team is about doing. But they've got to be willing to let us do it. And if they aren't willing to let us do it, then the thing is going to be an interesting little box that's going to fit in people's basements and garages until the world further goes down the drain pipe environmentally and geopolitically and what have you. So basically, this is one of the things that we have got to get the word out on, is that we have a team of enormously well-connected and sincere people. These are good people. These are what I call the leadership in exile, and the people who really do want to see a positive thing happen in the world on this issue that are ready to step forward. But, hey, you've got to have a valid, truly tested device to do it around. And at this point, we really have to move this whole area beyond testimony and documents to an operating machine, because A, the world needs it, and B, that's what's going to further prove the case. So that is the next stage in what we need to do. And to the extent that anyone listening to this has knowledge of someone with such a system, we would be open to talking to them at any time. I know that Dr. Loader is working full-time, 7 days a week, literally, investigating all these various things. And, of course, you have to sift through a lot of people who think they have a machine because they drew something on the back of an envelope sort of thing before you get to people who have actually something.